You are listening to Personal Branding Exposed with Megan McNeil. Each episode, we'll explore different areas of personal branding and how you can build, maintain, and leverage off your own personal brand. Here's your host, Megan.
Hey everyone, welcome to Personal Branding Exposed. And this evening I have got Manfred with me. Manfred is from Estonia originally, now calls the Northern Territory home. And we met a couple of years ago in Tasmania for a conference when I was at Study Perth. Manfred is a massive advocate for international education and for international students, not just in the Northern Territory, but across the whole of Australia. Welcome, Manfred.
Oh, well, thank you. Good to be on your podcast, finally.
Yeah, it's exciting to have you. I'm so sorry about last week. I sounded like an old man that had been smoking all his life. So we're going to, obviously, people will understand us slightly better this week.
Yeah, that's all right. Because when we called, I could hear you cough like an old man.
Yeah, it wasn't good. So, Manfred, now we met a couple of years ago in Tasmania for the International Education Annual Conference, which was held down in Hobart, which was amazing. We took over the whole town for a few days. Now, you have been a massive advocate for international education for as long as you've been an international student, from what I can understand. And I even tried to get you to relocate over to Perth at one point because you were doing such a great job over in the Northern Territory that I wanted to swoop you up for Study Perth. Let's talk a little bit about what brought you to Australia in the first place. What was growing up like? What was education? Tell us about before you came to Australia.
So I grew up in a very small town near the capital in Estonia, which has about 800 people only, and I think now it's raised up to 1,000 people. My dad's a farmer his whole life, and I grew up on a dairy farm as well. So my background's agriculture, but out of nowhere, I think my world has evolved towards business and marketing and all that sort of area and advocacy. We're kind of working with the community. But fast forward to kind of to that time when I came to Australia. Before that, I actually lived in Finland for almost a little bit more than a year. And I kind of found everything dull, like going out every weekend, getting drunk. There was no meaning really, you know? It was just kind of like 9-to-5 life, you know, and there was nothing to look forward to. And at one moment, actually, my best friend Ramo, he paid for everything for me to come to Australia, to land in Perth and get a job in Narrogin, which is, for me, it was a very small town, but a little bit bigger than my hometown of 4,000 people.
I was going to say, that's four times as big as your hometown.
Exactly. But to be honest, it is 2.5 hours from the capital of the state as well, where my hometown is about 25 minutes from the capital. So there was that difference, you know. So instead of 25 minutes, it's 2.5 hours to go to the city. So I lived there.
What were you doing in Narrogin?
So I was working there in a hay plant as well. So all the animal feed that we produced went for export. So it went to South Korea, China, Dubai, all the Middle East and then Asia area, because they don't obviously have their own land as much, or land that can grow hay like that. And it was, let's say, the finest level grade hay that we could produce in Western Australia.
There's a good plug for WA. We've got plenty of land and we've got good hay.
Exactly.
Okay, so you've spent 2 years out in Narrogin making hay. What happens after that?
After that, I actually went back home. I decided, all right, my time's off. My time's ended. I took time off. I went for 3 months in Southeast Asia. I landed in Vietnam. I took my buses and trains, traveled to Cambodia, to Thailand, flew to South Korea. From South Korea, I flew to Germany, bought myself a car, travel all the way to Estonia, you know. So very interesting 3 months of my life. And I really loved it, because I realized the most how much I love to travel and meet new people. And I did it by myself as well, because if you travel with someone, you know, in that moment, when I was traveling, I knew that I would have to go and meet new people, but at the same time, I could be to myself as well. And that's what I loved about it.
Yeah. How old are you at this point?
At that point, I was 21 when I came to Australia and 22 when I left, or 23 when I left. So
you've already packed in a fair amount before you've even turned 23 at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And I lived in Finland when I was 20.
Yes. So had you done, were you an international student in Finland before you came to Australia, or you didn't start studying again until you were in Australia?
No, so I was actually studying accounting back in Estonia, but I was working in Finland as a scaffolder.
Yeah.
Like I said, jack of all trades, master of none.
So, you did say that.
Yeah, it's just like I've done so many different odd jobs in my life, and I've learned from all of them as well a lot what I can imply in different fields as well. And I think that's the good part of it, that you learn new skills.
I think that's really interesting, because I'm all about niching. I think you've got to have a niche to be able to flourish and go to the next level and to really be able to level up and that kind of thing. But I don't think you should niche too soon. I think you have to try a lot of different things until you find what that thing is, because you've got to find what you don't like to start with, but also nobody's journey is the same. So like you said, you're taking all of these skills that you would think are unrelated, but you've been able to bring something from them to be even better at what it is you do now. So that's exciting. I like that.
Yeah. And 100% on that one, because after I arrived at home, I went back to my old job, working at a shop similar to Bunnings, but for us it's Bauhof, but it's the Estonian equivalent for Bunnings, you know. And I really liked that job as well, because there was a lot of customer service, and I dealt with, and I made a lot of good connections back at home, particularly in the logistics area and construction area. But I felt that something was missing. I knew I wanted to go back to studying after I left from Finland to Australia, and out of nowhere, because I had been to Darwin to visit my sister for a few weeks, and I thought, why not Darwin? Go and study there, you know.
You weren't worried about the crocodiles?
Nah, nothing to worry about the crocodile. The most I was worried about was the weather. Coming from a cold country and coming to the tropics, you know, it's just...
Yep.
5 years later, I'm still not adapting to it. So I'm trying to go from aircon to aircon. So.
Yeah, I imagine you are, because it'd be very humid up there as well.
Yeah, particularly right now in the wet season. So without the aircon, you can't do anything.
So we've visited Perth. We've worked in Nargen for 2 years. Then we have left. We've gone back to Estonia via most of Asia and done a bit of a road trip. We've then come back to the Northern Territory. And this time you are studying. This is your first this is the first time you're an international student.
Yeah. So I came to study here. I did my cert four in business management. Mm-hmm. With my background in accounting and everything, I didn't know what was going to happen. I'm going to be honest, because I came with a mindset, I just want to go and study something a little bit. It wasn't the hardest. Then I did my diploma in leadership and management. I was supposed to study advanced diploma of that, but at that stage, things had rolled into the place where, okay, I've been long enough in Darwin, almost 2.5 years. I'm starting to think that this is where I'm going to be for a while. I don't want to go back. So I decided, did a bit of research, started to do my bachelor's in accounting with my prior background in it. Luckily, I got a lot of credit transfers from my previous studies. So instead of 3 years, I'll be finishing in 2.5 years. I could have finished in 2 years, but I'm on part-time studies now, even though I am an international student. But in my particular case, where the university couldn't offer me some units at some point, I had to go on to part-time study.
Yeah. Now, you, I want to talk more about what it is that you do as an international student, not so much what you do as a student and actually studying, because I'm sure you have lots of fun like all students do, but you are actually, I know that you, because I personally know you, I know you were extremely shy when you first turned up in the Northern Territory, but you've become a massive voice for international education, not just for the international students in the Northern Territory, but across the whole of Australia. You meet with the education minister, you've held some fairly, I guess, high up roles within the international education scene. Can you tell me a little bit about how did you get into that in the first place? How did someone so shy become such a face for international education?
Yeah. So I think here I can thank my mentor, Rachel Shanahan from StudyNT, which is your equivalent for your study Perth in Western Australia. And at that stage, I was actually doing a 1 month course of English between my two courses, because otherwise I would have had too much. And for legal reasons, I had to study something. It was at the CDU campus where they had a little booth. Become a StudyNT ambassador. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is this? They explained to me a little bit. And I signed up. I think about 3 weeks later, I was appointed as one of 23 ambassadors for the StudyNT ambassador program. And I was part of that program for 3 years, fourth year as a mentor. So kind of over 3 years, I evolved. I made very, very good friends. Some of them have left out, unfortunately, Darwin, who has gone to Melbourne, who has gone to Adelaide, and who has moved to Canada, you know. But we still keep in touch because we just became so close friends.
I've gone to Perth, though, by the sounds of it.
Unfortunately, no. I've even gone to wedding from one of the persons I met there, Fatih. She now lives in Adelaide, and it was great. She actually came to my wedding about 2 months ago. Up here in Darwin, so it's kind of works out, and you make really good friends. But I think that whole program and what they taught us was that we were representing the Northern Territory, and why is it good to study here, and why should people come here, you know? And they ran workshops for us about personal branding, how to market something. Even how to network and all those sort of things. And I can fairly say that a lot of it I learned from there, from these workshops and everything that's in there. But a lot of it has become on my own learning as well. You know, if you don't know something, come on, mate. The internet is wide. Go and read a bit, you know. And then all the data is there. The good data is you have to pay for, but some of the stuff is free, you know.
Oh, I agree with you there that, you know, you can get anything on the internet, but I think there has to be a need and a want for it as well, because you can literally, like you said, get anything off the internet. And you are also enrolled in a few different courses and workshops to be able to improve some of your soft skills, you know, like your personal brand, networking, that kind of thing, which is fantastic. Like, I think that those skills are very underrated. Like, I think they're essential, really, for you know, not just your working life, just everything. But there's a lot of people that get those opportunities that don't do anything with them, or they might do something with them that's more, I guess, to propel their career or their business or something like that. You've really taken those skills and you've used them to be able to propel the international, you know, the student, their platform, their voice. You've been very selfless with that. That's, to me, I like that. That's where the story is, as far as I'm concerned. Here's, you've got someone who's very shy, who wouldn't say boo to a ghost, who's been given this opportunity, and instead of, you know, either running away from it or just using it for personal gain, you've really used that platform to propel international education. What are some of the highlights that you've had since having that platform?
Obviously, I think the thing, you get to meet ministers, and or the ministers even eventually come to you and call you by your first name, which was, for me, at that moment, I was like, what is going on? And how do they know about my sister, you know, who is here in Darwin as well? But it's interesting how all these things work in place. But because these are the people who you can advocate through, and you can say your opinion, or these organizations, you let them know, all right, look, this is happening, you know. Or they actually, quite often these organizations or government departments, they come to you and ask, hey, we know there's an issue, but how can we reach out to these people? And that's the platform that we have, and we can reach out to. It's kind of like a domino effect, you know, like, okay, we have this information, we'll just push it forward to the others.
And yeah. Yeah, you're a conduit to the decision makers, I guess.
Yeah,
which is very impressive. I like that. I mean, I've been in a room where you have been speaking to the ministers and you have got an audience with them. Like, it's impressive to see, you know, at that stage, a bunch of, I mean, I'm going to talk about CISA in a second, but, you know, basically a bunch of kids. Like, you were all in your early 20s and you could hold an audience with nearly any minister that had education anywhere near his title, and they would listen, sit up and listen, and they wanted your opinions, they wanted your feedback, and they are using what you're telling them to dictate their policy, I guess, and or maybe their marketing, you know, I never really know what's
going on.
But, you know, I saw it, I was in the room, I was seeing it happen, it's impressive.
Yeah, and I think a biggest milestone for me was when I got invited to the University Mental Health Framework by Origin, which is Origin is the National Youth Mental Health Organization, who is actually, so from Origin came Headspace as well. So Headspace is under Origin, and to work with these people on that advisory group, as an only international student, to put our voice forward was, I think, my highlight of that tenure and everything. I got to meet so many great people. Because of that, I've been invited to speak at conferences. As being a CISA executive, if there's been a institution shutdown, I've been invited to talk to the students, because quite often students find it easier when another student speaks to them. Not let's say someone from ASPA, which is an authority, and the student will be looking, okay, that person is an official person there, I'm scared the hell out of it. But if a random blog, not a random blog, but a guy from Darwin comes and tells them it's going to be all right, the government will support you and all that sort of thing, it will be a little bit easier for them, you know.
Obviously, oh, 100%. I remember seeing that even over here in Perth, some of the international students that, you know, depending on what country and the culture that they've come from, they are very scared of authority. That's not a conversation they want to have, even if authority is coming with help. It's just there's a lack of trust or just misunderstanding, etc. So I really see a lot of value in that peer-to-peer mentoring, that peer-to-peer advisory, just that peer-to-peer communication, and actually helping them out and telling them what is actually happening. That's massive. It really is.
Yeah. And I think it's great, and it gives us the opportunity to evolve. Like you said, we were just the kids in our early 20s, you know. It's been 4 years now. I'm 28. I sit on boards of organizations that are supporting international students daily. We started an organization which is now registered as a charity ourselves when the pandemic started in March, which is called KindShake. And
what's it called, sorry?
KindShake.
And how does someone find that if they want to?
They either go on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Obviously we don't have a Twitter because not yet there, but maybe one day, who knows. So I'm actually the person behind branding of that whole organization as well.
Yeah,
so everything that gets to put out there, it's what I do on a daily basis.
And what's the purpose of this organization? What was the outcomes? What did you do during the pandemic?
So in the beginning, because a lot of international students here in the Northern Territory work in hospitality. And obviously when the pandemic started, all the venues were shut down. A lot of people were out of their jobs. And it wasn't only for international students. It was also for migrants or temporary visa holders who were affected by it.
Yep.
So we ran weekly events every Friday up until 2 weeks ago was our final event for the year. every Friday we would give out at least 150 meals. So there was a need for it. We had to market it. We came together, worked with local businesses. We've been getting support from the local government. We've been getting support from businesses. A lot of the executives have put a lot of their own money into it just to help the other students, you know. We've been working together with Food Bank, Red Cross. Just a week ago, we had an event with 600 people, all temporary visa holders, international students. It was kind of like, it was called Power of Many Colors.
Yeah.
And the idea was to present different cultures from very different, but like Darwin is very multicultural, but I'm sure every city in Australia is as well. But all these different cultures coming together, no matter what their background is, who they are, they got together. There was performances, there was food. I even made black pudding till 3 a.m. myself.
No way. There was even a Scottish meal there. That's black pudding. Was that Estonian as well?
Yeah, we eat black pudding in Estonia as well. Ooh. And I cook, and I did it myself, which was a very interesting experience for me as well. So me and my wife till 3 a.m. we did some black pudding the night before.
I only like black pudding when it's made for me. I don't think I'd enjoy it if I made it myself.
Yeah, it's if I wasn't vegetarian really before, now I'm thinking of becoming more and more. Yeah.
That's like when I made patty. I thought it would be very healthy to make my own patty, but after you've seen molten livers, you know, it'll put you up for a while.
I just made patty the other week as well, and it's fine for me, I think. It just tastes so delicious.
There is that. Okay, so that sounds phenomenal. So you've created this during the pandemic, and there's obviously been a need for like 150 people to turn up on average for that during the pandemic. Is, you know, that shows there's a need, and 600 obviously for your final event. Is that because there was no support for those people? Because I know we've got JobKeeper, et cetera, but that's maybe more for permanent residents and citizens. Yeah. This was for people who had no way of getting home, but had no way of having an income either. Is that who it was for?
And that's the thing, that it was for the people who had lost their jobs, who didn't have an income, they couldn't apply for JobSeeker, JobKeeper, whatever, you know. We could give them at least some vouchers so they can buy hygiene products or things like that, you know. So they could actually, and there were a couple of other initiatives as well. One of them was Bayan NT, which is which was done by Filipino student community as well. So they had a really good idea as well, where they used that and people could go and buy with points the things they actually needed. Kind of, and it wasn't that here's a hamper, use this, but a lot of the time people would not use everything in that hamper. They would only pick the things that they would actually need.
Yeah. Oh, that makes total sense, because I know all the research says that, you know, you have with best intentions, you can donate things to people, but really it's much better to give money or for them to be able to make their own decision, so you empower them to actually have a little bit of control, especially when you're in a situation where you're so powerless that you're actually doing that little, I mean, it's good for their mental health as well, if nothing else, to be able to make that decision again, you know, what is it that I actually need to spend in that way. So that's cool. I like that. All right. So we talked very, very briefly about CESA earlier, but most people probably won't know what that is that we're referring to. Can you tell us a little bit about CESA and what your involvement was?
So CESA, which is Council of International Students Australia, that was actually, I think, my uplift for this kind of international education sector. Because it was Study NT who sent me down to Canberra. It was Study NT who said, look, apply for an executive position. I did apply. I got elected. I was the vet and TAFE officer because I was in the vocational education training sector at that time. It is still close to my heart because I actually worked there for more than a year as a student support officer. The first year I was the vet TAFE officer, which I did a little research, and what I found, and that was kind of a before everything pushed out as well, that the research showed that there was a need for mental health services for international students, not only the vet sector or TAFE sector, abroad.
Across the board.
Yeah. So then I applied through CESA for a grant with Study NT to run mental health workshops, kind of to build that awareness, to get students, to let them know how can they actually access these services, because quite often international students don't know that they have free services that they can access. Because yes, going to a psychologist can be very, very costly. I know it from personal experience. But there are also services that are offered by local government or state governments, you know, like it's just that there is, but it's the problem that students don't know how to reach or what to do or where to go. So moving forward to the second year, I was appointed as the undergrad officer because by that time I had started my university. And during that time, I think it was 3 months into it when I was appointed by the committee as the acting public relations officer for the organization that represents about 650,000 people.
Yeah, it's massive.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, I went to the CESA conference, where was that, in Cairns? Yeah, Cairns, up in Queensland, where I was presenting for Study Perth. There are some research findings from a project that we'd done over here in Perth. And I didn't really know what to expect because we obviously don't have a massive amount of CESA activity over here because we're so isolated from the rest of the country. But then you could say that about Northern Territory, and you're extremely, extremely active in there. And I flew over and I could not believe, because I'm going to go back to this again, it was a bunch of young kids. You were all, the majority of you, in your early 20s that were running this conference, which was massive. You had some amazing speakers. I mean, I was one of the speakers, so they must have been pretty good. No, but in all seriousness, you had some amazing speakers. You had a lot of ministers. You had CEOs of like some of the major institutes and the organizations that look after international education. This was not just a kids' party. I remember that the committee and a lot of the attendees would wear suits. It was probably the smartest conference I've ever been to. And I've been to a lot of conferences all around the world. And, you know, it's generally an excuse to kind of go a little bit more casual. You guys took it seriously. Like, you were dressed the part. You had some very high profile people in place. It was fantastic. So I think that's a credit to not just yourself, but the whole CESA committee and that group that you've formed, which, you know, it covers the whole of Australia. And your kids, like, well, you're not kids, you're in your early 20s, but like your youngsters that are just getting so much done, because it's almost like there's no red tape, because you're just doing it. There's no one telling you what you can or can't do. You're making your own rules and you're going for it, which I think is really impressive.
Yeah. And the first time I actually went to the conference in Canberra, for CESA conference, I met at that time the Minister for Education, Your Honourable Simon Birmingham, who is now the Minister for Finance. And I met him at the Hobart conference as well. And that's where he called me by my first name already, you know. We had met the second time already. So
you've really created like a very strong personal brand within, I mean, I'm gonna say a niche because that's what it is, international education, where, you know, you've got success and influence. It's not just for ego, which I know it's nice when the minister remembers your name, etc. But, you know, you've had a lot of success and you've had a lot of influence for your sector, for other international students.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, with these, when you're being involved with these organizations and everything, you get to know a lot. Not only, yes, you get to meet the ministers, but you get to actually do something that is, by what I find meaningful, that I'm helping someone, because I know I want to help people, and that's been my goal for a very long time. depending what whatever it is, and how can I help? If I can't help them, I'll guide them to the right people, and yeah. They might get their help there.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yes. Oh, I love it. Okay, so what is next for you, Manfred? What is happening next in the international sector? What are you going to be working on next? How are you going to support your fellow international students next? What's the big thing?
So we've been actually doing this for past months as well with the Kind of Shake. It wasn't just the fact that we were giving out meals or things like that, because the biggest issue that we found out was the need for mental health support.
Yeah.
And employability. And I think employability and that kind of going back to the society for people after lockdowns, it was going to be very hard. So we had series of events called Skill Up to Scale Up, where we had speakers, like entrepreneurs coming to speak, how they started their own businesses, how to run, similar what StudyNT did with us. Mm-hmm. We came, the students gave another platform for other students what to do. But at the same time, we're having events, which are called Meet the Local, where we're putting employers together with international students to show the skills that international students have with their different cultural backgrounds and everything.
Yeah, amazing. Study Perth are doing something very similar at the moment as well. They've just launched over here. I think it's brilliant because having worked with international students and for international students, you know, at Study Perth, I was working for international students. There is such a wealth of knowledge and expertise, and like hard workers, people that are really motivated. Like some of my favorite people are international students that I'm still friends with even to this day from like all across the world. And I love that diversity. I think, you know, I've got working with a client at the moment and his thing is all about, you know, we need everyone around the table. And when you look at international students, gosh, you have everyone around the table. You have different cultures, you have different genders, you've got different understandings of what's going on, and just all that breadth of knowledge. And just, I think it's fantastic. So that's exciting. So you're actually marrying up the locals with the international students now for, is this just for employment opportunities or is it for different types of mentoring and volunteering as well?
Everything, volunteering, what can we do? Because we've been running these with the Rotary Club together.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And you know Rotary Club. You're part of the Rotary Club. And we've been working with them together with different, not the only one branch, but different branches together as well. So it's been great. And the support from the Rotary Clubs is immense. And we're very happy about it, you know.
Yeah.
So because again, Rotary Club reached out to us. They said, oh, look, we want to help international students, but we don't know how to reach out to them. Again, because someone knew that Manfred, Ben, Ali, or someone from Kind of Shake, okay, these boys or these girls, they know how to reach out to them.
Yeah.
Let's shake hands and do the right thing together, you know.
Yeah, let's make it happen. Oh, Rotary is just another beast in itself. You know, the global reach that you have within Rotary, if you get involved, is massive as well. I know Study Perth and the Elizabeth Key Rotary Club here, they partnered up to do some stuff. I was going to say last year. Yeah, it will be last year now because 2020 has just sort of disappeared. You know, and that's brilliant, you know, getting international students within local communities and stuff, which is great. That is very exciting. I love your story, Manfred. That's why I was so excited to have you on the show, because obviously I met you a couple of years ago. We've stayed in touch. I was super impressed when I met you, hence why I tried to poach you over to Perth at the time. Because I just think that, you know, you've come from another country. You don't, like, English is your second, third? Which language is it for you?
No, it's in your third, or second, I would say, more now.
Second language. You know, you've come over here, new culture, new language, and you have just become such a massive voice for your industry. And I think that that is commendable and super impressive. So well done, you, and keep it up. And I can't wait to hear what's next.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Manfred. Now, if anyone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to find you?
LinkedIn.
Find, oh, There we go.
Yeah, exactly. Or Facebook. Either one works. Sometimes you get some of my personal stuff on Facebook as well when I mix up my platforms, you know, and like, oh, all right, it's already there. It's going to be there. but LinkedIn.
I did enjoy your wedding video on LinkedIn, though, to be honest. Yeah, it did exactly. Break up the monotony. It was good.
Yeah, and that's why I posted it, because I thought, yes, LinkedIn needs that professional word, but at the same time, you know, if you add that little bit of a personal touch there, it might be good.
Oh, 100%. That's what building your personal brand is, and it's knowing when you stop sharing too much as well. You know, I don't see your breakfast every day, which is pretty good. But, you know, and also your wife is your biggest supporter and a big part to play in how far you've come. So why would you not give her a shout out on LinkedIn as one of your biggest supporters? Because if it was a work colleague or a boss or an employee, you'd do it. So yeah, I think it's the right thing for it. Fantastic. Thank you. Pleasure as always, Manfred. And I can't wait to speak to you again.
All right.
Thanks so much for listening to Personal Branding Exposed. If you enjoyed this episode or any of the others, then please listen to some more, but also share it with your friends and leave a review. I'm a pretty new podcast, so that means quite a lot for me, and I really appreciate your kind words. Social media, if you have any feedback or you just want to chat, really, send me a message. I'm normally found on Instagram or LinkedIn. They're where I like to hang out, but I do have Facebook if that's your thing. And also on the website, you can get my details there and you can get in touch. Thank you so much for getting this far. If you want a little bit more though, these episodes actually go out live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Western Standard Time here in Western Australia at 8 p.m. which if you're in Canada or America, that'll be first thing in the morning for you, so you can listen over your morning coffee. And if you're in the UK, it'll be over your lunch break. I speak to these amazing people every single Tuesday, and they just expose their personal brands to us. They tell us what makes them tick, what motivates them. We hear their stories of where they've come from and where they are now and how they got there. There's loads you can take from this, lots of motivation and inspiration. Like, these people are awesome and they've really niched down. They know what it is that they're doing, so there's so much to take away from them. I have got this amazing lineup of people coming up, so make sure it's in your diary, 8 p.m. Western Standard Time, and the podcast drops every Wednesday. Till next time.